Welcome to Evening Under Lamplight, the show that invites you to attend. We are coming to you from the Gwydir Street Studios of Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, at the mic with you this evening. Don't forget to get in touch with us at Lamplight at Cambridge 105 FM and wander over to momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can listen to the show again and find podcasts of all the archived shows. This evening, Under Lamplight, I invite you to attend to church bells. I did a show in the early days of Evening Under Lamplight on bells, and we might find ourselves repeating a few of the items, but now there seemed enough material on just church bells to make that the focus. I say, there's some bells. I say that, and yet our first piece is not really church bells, though they are sacred bells. Behind me, you can hear Chris Burrows performing on Tibetan bells in an album called Tibetan Journey. And this track describes the Buddhist pilgrim's arrival at Lhasa. Well, not describes. I don't quite see what's descriptive about it, but maybe let's say it evokes the pilgrim's arrival at Lhasa. Let's just sit still for a while and let the sound of these bells cleanse our minds before going further into our evening under lamplight together. What makes these bells so soothing is their resonance. If we attend to the sound, submit to it, and let it carry us with it, we may well find ourselves floating on those long, reverberating vibrations, a willing surrender for a bit. Give it a try, and let's spend a little time letting these resonances pass through us. Yes, you'll get a little impatient. We all expect radio to provide us with constant stimulation. But let's see if we, you and I both, can just sit attentive to resonance for a minute or two. Well, how was that? Were you attentive? And then what? We were attending to Chris Burrows playing all the instruments on that track called Arriving at Lhasa from his album Tibetan Journey. Our next piece of music is not really about bells, but it begins and ends with a peal of very English bells. Hearing these bells ring from a local churches used to be a common feature in English life. And in fact, in my village of Linton, we get to hear the bells every Wednesday evening and then again on Sunday mornings. It's part of the charm, but it is grounded in real observance and there's nothing phony about it. The bells also ring out the time every hour, as though reminding us that all of us in the village are united at least by the same notice of passing time, if by nothing else. The song we'll hear is The Kinks' Big Black Smoke, about a girl who runs away from this kind of rural community and heads for the big city, where she thinks life will be more exciting. But of course it turns out only to be destructive. And while her mother pines her heart away, looking for her child in the big black smoke, the girl, who remains nameless, lives a life at the bottom of the heap, while she slept in cafes and coffee bars and bowling alleys. I can picture her in one of those tawdry 1960s cafes, sitting in a corner, a canvas or a string bag at her feet. There were no plastic bags then, with her few remaining possessions. One of those hideous blue and white striped mugs of milky tea on the table, with a sugar bowl filled with sticky lumps of discolored granules. The windows all steamed up, cigarette smoke in clouds through the room, puddles on the floor from people coming in, dripping rain off their Macs and umbrellas. The waitress torn between moving the girl on and compassionately allowing her to keep her head on the damp table and get a few more minutes of sleep. Come on, love. You'll have to finish up that tea now and leave the table for someone else. The church bells at the beginning remind us of the idyllic life she left behind. But very soon the bells are lost to the bass and guitar and Ray's knowing and mocking voice. At the end the bells try again, but are only a distant sound, lost in Dave's mocking, "All right, all right." The girl can long for the bells as much as she wants, but they're out of reach now. So here is Big Black Smoke.
Child in the big black smoke, in the big black smoke. The frailest, purest girl the world has seen. Across your mind, across your mind. And everybody said that she knew no sin or did no wrong till she walked the streets of the big black smoke. Well, she slept in cafes and coffee bars and bowling alleys, and every penny she had was spent on purple hearts and cigarettes. Ah, she took all her pretty colored clothes, ran away from home, boy next door, for a boy named Joe. Tried to drag her down the big black smoke, in the big black smoke, in the big black smoke, in the big black
Well, where is our sympathy in this song? I've always been arrested by the description of the girl, frailest, purest girl the world has seen. Poor thing. But wait, who is calling her the frailest, purest girl the world has seen? It's according to her ma, according to her pa. Oh no, how oppressive. Imagine this girl having to live under the burden of parents who laid this purity on her. We're on the side of the girl, surely, and the parents are just sentimental fools, projecting their own vision of an ideal daughter onto this girl they don't really know. But are they so awful? What else would we expect them to say, especially after their girl has run off? and her mother pines her heart away, looking for her child in the big black smoke. Will she find the girl? Will the girl be saved from a life of purple hearts and cigarettes? The drowned out bells at the end seem to suggest no happy ending. This song is only one of many songs Ray Davies has written about lost daughters. In Polly, written about the same time, we find pretty Polly leaving home for a life of parties, but the bells of home are not out of reach for her, and when she does return home, she is welcomed. Mummy's proud cause Polly's still in chains. She's happy now, her baby's coming home again. Polly is sorry she left, but she just had to break away for a while. And then the kink in the song. And Mama knows cause Mama was the same. It turns out to be the same old pattern, generation after generation. Or there's Rosie, won't you please come home? Sung by Rosie's sibling, calling Rosie to come back home from far away so that their mother can be relieved of her worry. Mama don't know where you've been. Now, I hesitate to present this next song, but what the hell, let's see what you think. It's another from our featuring Philadelphia music slot. And this evening, under lamplight, I am sort of proud to bring you Lee Andrews and the Hearts, a 1950s doo-wop group from Philadelphia. I took their records with me to college, far from Philadelphia, and occasionally played the songs to the amazement or shock of my friends. And I hadn't listened to their music for years and years until I suddenly remembered, for this show, their song The Bells of St. Mary's. Yes, church bells, but not English parish church bell ringing. These are the bells of a church or wedding chapel. Wedding bells, in fact. The bells of St. Mary's, I hear they are calling the young love, the true love that comes from the sea. The sea? How did that get there? Some sort of Atlantic City hanky-panky? So, my beloved, when red leaves are falling, red leaves. The love bells shall ring out for you and me. That's pretty much it. The Vera Lynn version of the song gives us more context. As she waits for her lover returning, presumably from war, over the sea, with the falling leaves expressing the sad tinge of all the pain they felt from their long separation. But don't look out for such complexity in the Lee Andrews and Hearts version. But do look out for the harmonies, their raison d'être. And here, with the organ's sweeping, weeping chords in the background throughout. I hope you won't just sit there stunned. You're hearing part of my musical heritage, man, for better or for worse, as the marriage ceremony says.
The bells of St. Mary, I hear they are calling the young love, the true love that
the love bells.
Lee Andrews and the Hearts, a Philadelphia group from the 50s, redoing Vera Lynn's and Bing Crosby's Bells of St. Mary's. And can we stay with our Philadelphia connection for one more church bell song? But this time, I'm sorry to tell you, the bells are funeral bells. At least that's what I think is going on. He's hearing the bells tolling at the funeral of his beloved and wishes she were with him again. All very sad, but Clive McFatter, the lead singer, before he moved on to the Drifters, goes, well, a little overboard with his grief. Hey man, watch how much I can cry on this track, he seems to be saying. And the more he weeps and wails, the more we laugh. Watch how a sad song becomes a comic song. Oh, and the Philadelphia connection? Well, the group is called Billy Ward and His Dominoes. Billy Ward grew up in Philadelphia. I'm sure these things matter. He was an educated and trained musician, but threw his fortunes in with his dominoes and was a hard taskmaster. He gets the credit for the arrangement of this song, and it's probably him on the organ, too, for this song begins where the other left off, with organ chords. But don't miss Clyde's opening lines as he holds back his sobs to tell us, there are four black horses with eyes of flaming red. There are roses tied with ribbons all around my baby's head.
Brothers and sisters, we are gathered here.
You know, this is not the way to make a sad song. The Latin poet Horace once said that if you want to make your readers weep, you have to weep yourself. but then you dry your tears and craft a moving poem or song. You don't just bludgeon your audience with your own tears. Well, you've just heard, perhaps for the first time, Billy Ward and his Dominoes with the 1952 song called simply Bells. And keeping with church bells, I want to share with you one of my favorite little passages from one of my favorite novelists, Charles Dickens. The Guardian yesterday began its promotional fuss for the 200th anniversary of Dickens' birth. We're in for a lot of noise about Dickens over the next 15 months. In the novel Little Dorrit, Arthur Clennam has just returned to London after 20 years away in China. He is alone at a coffee house late on a Sunday afternoon, haunted by painful memories of his childhood, in particular by the stern religion his mother forced on him and its interminable Sundays. The neighborhood is desolate. The church has done nothing to improve the squalid conditions of the poor inhabitants, and none of the inhabitants will be going to church. Yet the bells continue to call them. Mr. Arthur Clennam sat in the window of the coffee house on Ludgate Hill, counting one of the neighboring bells, making sentences and burdens of songs out of it in spite of himself, and wondering how many sick people it might be the death of in the course of the year. As the hour approached, its changes of measure made it more and more exasperating. At the quarter, it went off into a condition of deadly lively importunity, urging the populace in a voluble manner to come to church, come to church, come to church. At the 10 minutes, it became aware that the congregation would be scanty and slowly hammered out in low spirits, "They won't come, they won't come, they won't come." At the 5 minutes, it abandoned hope and shook every house in the neighborhood for 300 seconds with one dismal swing per second as a groan of despair. "Thank heaven," said Clennam when the hour struck and the bells stopped. That was Vierne's Crillon de Westminster with Olivier Latry on the organ, a piece based on London bells, though not quite the despairing church bells Dickens had been writing about. And here is another passage about clamoring church bells people do not really attend to. We move northwards from London to Edinburgh for this reading from Stevenson's early book, Edinburgh Picturesque Notes, a book that did not particularly endear him to his fellow Edinburgh citizens. In this passage, he speaks of the discordant bells pealing all over Edinburgh on a Sunday morning. Why are there so many different bells? Because the people are so quarrelsome and insist on the utter truth of their own little vision of God, declaring every other view wrong. So they build their own church in opposition to the other three or four churches within a stone's throw. And all send out their peal of bells, pounding on our ears, clashing with all the other bells. At the end, Stevenson hopes for the day when people will choose to come together on the points of belief they hold in common, rather than rushing apart because of the few small points they differ about. Then, he says, many of these ugly churches might be demolished and turned once more into useful building material. Well, many of those churches have been demolished, or at least closed as churches, and open again as meeting halls, eating places, and other secular purposes. It's not as though there is one big happy family of Christians in Edinburgh now, but because for most people, all discussion of doctrine simply does not matter. But let's go back to the late 1870s, when the quarrels and the quarrelling bells were still very much a feature of Edinburgh life. Edinburgh is a city of churches, as though it were a place of pilgrimage. You will see four within a stone cast at the head of the west bow. Some are crowded to the doors, some are empty like monuments, and yet you will ever find new ones in the building. Hence that surprising clamour of the church bells that suddenly breaks out upon the Sabbath morning from Trinity and the sea skirts to Morningside on the borders of the hills. I have heard the chimes of Oxford playing their symphony in a golden autumn morning, and beautiful it was to hear. But in Edinburgh, all manner of loud bells join, or rather disjoin, in one swelling, brutal babblement of noise. Now one overtakes another, and now lags behind it. Now five or six all strike on the pained tympanum at the same punctual instant of time, and make together a dismal chord of discord. And now, for a second, all seem to have conspired to hold their peace. Indeed, there are not many uproars in this world more dismal than that of the Sabbath bells in Edinburgh. A harsh ecclesiastical tocsin, the outcry of incongruous orthodoxies, calling on every separate conventicler to put up a protest, each in his own synagogue, against right-hand extremes and left-hand defections. And surely there are few worse extremes than this extremity of zeal, and few more deplorable defections than this disloyalty to Christian love. Shakespeare wrote a comedy of Much Ado About Nothing. The Scottish nation made a fantastic tragedy on the same subject. And it is for the success of this remarkable piece that the bells are sounded every Sabbath morning on the hills above the Forth. How many of them might rest silent in the steeple? How many of these ugly churches might be demolished and turned once more into a useful building material if people who think almost exactly the same thoughts about religion would condescend to worship God under the same roof? We followed Stevenson's description of Edinburgh church bells with John Rutter and the Cambridge Singers giving us Ding Dong Merrily on High, usually performed as a Christmas carol, but it needn't be just for Christmas. It can serve here as a good little anthem of the choir of angels singing in unison Hosanna in Excelsis, something the different Edinburgh congregations could never do. You're listening to Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, and we're attending to church bells. And so was John Donne, attending to church bells in 1623, when Donne, then Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral in London, fell ill with typhus and nearly died. He recovered, however, and wrote his Devotions upon Emergent Occasions, which recreated his sickbed experience in his typically vivid, passionately analytical manner. At one point, the book describes his thoughts as he lies on his bed and hears the church bells tolling outside. The bells would often toll when someone was very near death, to alert everyone else that one of their community was dying, so everyone could pray for the dying person at this crossroad time of their soul. Here, Donne wonders whether he might be more ill than he'd thought he was, and those tolling bells might be tolling for him. Now this bell, tolling softly for another, says to me, thou must die. Perchance he for whom this bell tolls may be so ill as that he knows not it tolls for him. And perchance I may think myself so much better than I am as that they who are about me and see my state may have caused it to toll for me, and I know not that. Who bends not his ear to any bell which upon any occasion rings? But who can remove it from that bell which is passing a piece of himself out of this world? No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends or of thy own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Another man may be sick too, and sick to death, and this affliction may lie in his bowels as gold in a mine, and be of no use to him. But this bell that tells me of his affliction digs out and applies that gold to me, if by this consideration of another's danger I take mine own into contemplation, and so secure myself by making my recourse to my God, who is our only security. Thank you. Well, that was the Kyrie from the Misa Flamenco, performed by the Andalusian Instrument Ensemble. I used to play this album so much that the vinyl is far too crackly to use on the radio, and so I bought the MP3 from iTunes, and here it is, clean and clear. The Kyrie was performed in the flamenco style of La Caña. And now we come to our Dylan song. You may have guessed already that we'll hear Ring Them Bells from the Oh Mercy album. The song is one of Dylan's catalogue songs. Here, a list of all sorts of people for whom the bell should be rung. But why? What's the significance of ringing the bells? It's not, as in Donne's passage, to tell the world that these people are dying. Maybe, though, it's the world that is dying. From the very beginning of his career, Dylan has been alerting us, bell ringer that he is, to the impending collapse of our complacent world when the hard rain finally arrives. Here we are at a place where the world's on its side, where the shepherd is asleep, and where they're breaking down the distance between right and wrong. Sound familiar? It should. It's the world we're living in. As I sometimes do, I'm going to read through the lyrics, since they come at us even in this slow song, in such a flow that we can hardly catch them all. If we attend to the words first, there's more chance that we'll pick up more of the words when we listen to the song itself. Just attend to those phrases that you can catch. Don't strain too hard. Let them just sink in as you attend, but don't analyze. Not at this point, anyway. Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, cross the valleys and streams. For they're deep and they're wide, and the world's on its side. And time is running backwards, and so is the bride. Ring them bells, St. Peter, where the four winds blow. Ring them bells with an iron hand, so the people will know, oh, it's rush hour now, on the wheel and the plough, and the sun is going down upon the sacred cow. Ring them bells, sweet Martha, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that God is one. Oh, the shepherd is asleep, where the willows weep, and the mountains are filled with lost sheep. Ring them bells for the blind and the deaf. Ring them bells for all of us who are left. Ring them bells for the chosen few who will judge the many when the game is through. Ring them bells for the time that flies, for the child that cries when innocence dies. Ring them bells, St. Catherine, from the top of the room. Ring them from the fortress for the lilies that bloom. Oh, the lines are long and the fighting is strong, and they're breaking down the distance between right and wrong.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, cross the valleys and streams. For the deep and the wide, and the world's on its side, and time is running backwards, and so is the bride. Ring them bells, St. Peter, where the fall winds blow. Ring them bells with an iron hand so the people will know. Oh, it's rush hour now, on the wheel and the plow, and the sun is a-going down upon the sacred cow. Sweet Martha, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that a God is one. Oh, the shepherd is asleep where the willows weep, and the mountains are filled with lost sheep. Ring them bells for the blind and the deaf. Ring them bells for all of us who are left. Ring them bells for the chosen few, who will judge the many when the game is through. Ring them bells for the time that flies, for the child that cries when her innocence dies. Ring them bells, St. Catherine, from the top of the room. Ring them from the fortress for the lilies that bloom. For the lines are long and the fighting is strong, and they're breaking down the distance between right and wrong.
And now, as so often happens on Evening Under Lamplight, we move from literal to metaphorical. The bells in Leonard Cohen's song Anthem are not literal bells. Ring the bells that still can ring, he says. And he's not talking about some impoverished church that cannot afford to have its time-worn bells repaired. He's talking about us. And the bells we're ringing are all our words and deeds, everything we think, say, and do. I was talking to my neighbor just today, and she asked me what I'd be playing on tonight's show. When I said Leonard Cohen, "Oh," she said, "he's always so depressing." Well, yes, in many ways I can see that he's depressing, and when we hear his voice on Anthem, it will be an almost dead voice struggling to get the lines out. But it's a voice with great depth and great strength, all coming out of whatever defeats have led to its almost death. But he's not dead yet, and he's not giving up, and he's telling us not to give up. That's why it's not depressing. Anthem is another catalogue song, and what it is cataloguing are all the failures, abuses, and losses of our world. But the refrain sweeps up all this pain and finds triumph in defeat. Our metaphoric bells may have been broken in the fray, but nevertheless, we're told, ring the bells that still can ring. So what if we're wounded and not perfect? Forget your perfect offering. And then the amazing, wise insight that grounds the whole song. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. Now the question is, do we find that depressing or inspiring? We are all cracked. All our works are imperfect. Or as our friend Robert Louis Stevenson put it, you yourself are compacted of infirmities, perfect, you might say, in imperfection. And yet, you have a something in you lovable and worth preserving. It is in that very imperfection that we find the best that is in us, and where we are weak enough to allow something larger than we are to penetrate into us. Every heart to love will come, Leonard says, but like a refugee. Love is not easy, but it is there, available to us as a refuge, a safe haven in the midst of the imperfect world. Or the song might be saying that it is only the broken people who really come to love. Well, that would upset a lot of people, wouldn't it? Not because it's depressing, but because it's so radical. All right, let's hear the song already. Stepping up next is Leonard Cohen and Anthem. And here we come to the end of our evening together under lamplight. I'm not sure what to do with the short time remaining. We often close the show with Leonard Cohen easing us out with his prolonged endings, but we have extra time tonight. There are several pieces we might move on to, but they're a little too fast-paced for this time of the evening. So here's what I propose to do. Let's go back to Chris Burrow's Tibetan Journey and hear some of that Arriving at Lhasa track we heard at the beginning. Are we better able to attend to it after our evening here together? Do the reverberations of the Tibetan bells mean a little more or penetrate a little more deeply? Of course, they penetrate only through the cracks. That's where the light gets in. So this is good night from me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, bringing you Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Cambridge's community radio. And I look forward to what we can do together next time. Now, with a mighty reverberation, we arrive at Lhasa.